Welcome to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How are you doing, Jermaine?
What? I'm good. What's the white devil saying? How was the holiday?
It was mixed. That's what I'll say, right? So we went to Gran Canaria, near Africa, but in Spain. And I obviously took a little baby there, and the temperatures were nearly hitting 30 degrees, and my baby's ginger, you know? He doesn't like the hot, doesn't like the heat.
Ginger.
There was a number
She's a vampire. She doesn't like the sun.
She doesn't like the sun. There's a number of occasions of projectile vomiting, and, you know, I won't mention, but diarrhea. Well, I've just mentioned it. Diarrhea. Almost at the same time, that was pretty bad. But she got into it. She improved as the week went on. And unfortunately, like, Gran Canaria is great if you're a runner and you want to go and run trails and stuff. Oh wow, that's a great place to go. Amazing views. I mean, they've got a big race next weekend. I think the Trans Gran Canaria, and it's an amazing place. It's a beautiful place. But babies don't like hiking that much. And if you take a baby, you take a baby in like 30 degree heat, and you carry him on your chest, right? And these they call it. I've got an ergo baby, is what it's called. But you carry him there. So I'm a hot. I'm very hot most of the time. Do you know what I mean? I'm like a human radiator. So I've got this little baby.
All athletes are hot, right?
So I'm a human radiator. I've got this baby, this tiny baby who's hot. He's too hot. She's just too hot. She can't handle it because she's ginger. So I'm hot. She's hot. It's the sun's coming down. We're trying to hike over these hills. Yeah, it didn't quite work out as hoped. So, yeah. She was permanently sweaty, my little baby. But there was one day when it rained, actually, which is like, it was actually pissing rain. It's quite funny. Like, it's the worst. It's like the most cold and in trouble I've been. I thought I was going to have a lie down and have a sleep and die. To be honest. I ran at the top of the hill. It's the biggest hill in Gran Canaria. So I got ready and I woke up and Molly was like, again, Sean's going running again. So she was probably not too happy about me doing it. And she said, yeah. And it was, the forecast had been raining the day before, but it was due to get better. So she thought, I was getting ready to go, got my coat on, all that sort of thing. And she goes, why are you wearing your coat? Why don't you just wear a vest? I thought, oh no. She goes, it's hot out there. Get out there. So I thought, I'll put a t-shirt on midway out, halfway house. And I got up and I headed up the top of this hill, and the weather was almost sub-zero temperature right at the top of this hill, because it's quite high. And it was just, you couldn't see a thing. It was just mist everywhere. And I was freezing, and the trail was soaked, and I was slipping everywhere. And I got to the top and it started absolutely pissing with rain. And I was there in my little t-shirt and a pair of shorts. And my hands...
Yeah, Let's Get Running t-shirt.
My Let's Get Running t-shirt. I'd fallen over a couple of times and my hands were covered in mud, right? So my hands were wet. I was sweating because I was climbing so high. And I think I was close to tears. And so I turned around, I thought, I can't get to the top of this mountain. I've got to go home. But on the way down, because then the headwind was against me and that wind was in my face, I was running down the hill. And honestly, I didn't even know. I went feral. Like, I was going down going, if anyone had seen me, there was like this little skinny white man like trying to run down this hill, just like making weird noises because he was so cold. I didn't even know I was making those noises. I went proper feral. Yeah, so it was... Yeah, that was bad.
And then you was complaining it was too hot, and then you're crying. It was crying.
I got down to the bottom, and Molly said, "Are you all right?" And I was like, a bit weird. And you know when you've like marathon runners will know this, when they've done like a really long run and they haven't eaten anything, they basically slur. So I was cold. I hadn't eaten any breakfast. I'd run for about an hour and 20, most of it uphill, and I couldn't say it. I think I'm in a bit of trouble, Molly. I'm really cold and I can't. Went a bit Dorset there, but yeah, it was funny. It was funny looking back on it. It wasn't funny at the time. Well, how have you? What have you been up to?
Obviously, just driving.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah.
So, one guy gets home, massive bag.
Yeah.
And he says he wants Waterloo. I'm like, it's fine. I go Waterloo. Puts his bag on, but stands right near the front doors.
Yeah.
So I'm driving along, and I'm thinking no one can stand there. So obviously, when we get to the next stop, open the doors, he gets squashed. You know, yeah, where the doors swing in.
Yeah.
So he's complaining. He's like gruffing.
Yeah.
And this big black guy gets on, and it was hot. Like, it was a hot day.
Yeah.
But he was wearing a woolly hat, and he was wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
And he was sweating. Right, so like alarm bells are ringing already. He gets on
yeah.
and he goes to the guy, move down the bus. And I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
And then he starts really going at the guy.
Really?
I'm like, and then I had to sort of say, whoa, 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 whoa. And then he just goes to the back. I was thinking, that's a bit suspect, right?
Yeah.
And then we're going down the Strand, obviously chock-a-block traffic.
Yeah.
The bus is, cars in front pull away, and I'm obviously driving now, like,
yeah.
only at 5 mile an hour.
Yeah.
And he presses the button to let him, this the crazy guy,
yeah.
presses the button to let himself off the bus.
Yeah. As in, just and, open, like an emergency button?
Yeah. And the doors will open if you're going below 5 mile an hour, but if you're going over, it doesn't open.
Okay, yeah.
So I must have been doing like 4 mile an hour. So yeah. he presses the button and the bus just goes, and everyone sort of like throws forward. And then he obviously jumps out and he's upset because he nearly fell over. So he yeah. gets off the bus and he smashes my wing mirror, inside wing mirror, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? And then he goes marching down the street. And then there's this old woman in front of him
yeah.
and he's like shouting out because obviously you know the Strand is really busy going yeah. into Charing Cross
yeah
anyone that gets in his way he's shouting at him telling yeah. him to move out of his way and he's like he had a can of Coke so throw it on the floor and then in my head I'm thinking where's all those like 15 year old hoodies that were on my bus that time to come beat this guy up yeah you know
and later and you found out it was your best mate
And then he, so I'll keep an eye on him, and he's a long way down, yeah?
yeah.
And he biotes this big guy.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that's right, beat him up. But like, but you know when people are aggressive, you're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when they got a hint of crazy,
yeah.
you get scared.
Yeah.
So even the big guy was like, oh, I just walked across the road. I was like, shit.
If you see a man wearing a hat. Sunglasses, sweating on a hot day. Yeah, you don't want to get involved with that. Nice. So we've got yeah. We have to announce our winner of the 10K Improvers Challenge. Okay. So in the end, we didn't get enough people coming back to us with their improvements. So ladies, we didn't see any improvements. I'm sure you all did it. I'm sure you all run 10Ks beginning of January to the beginning of February. But we didn't have a final result emailed into us. So, unfortunately, the ladies' T-shirt is going to have to be left dormant on the table. So, I'm not going to send that one out.
It's going to go in storage.
Going to go
vintage,
in storage.
They're missing out on vintage garment there.
Yeah. But we can give them a men's prize out because we had a few male entries. We had me. I didn't improve because I went over to Ireland. I ran a 10K, sorry, a 10 mile. And I did all right, man. It was all right. It was the worst weather I've ran in for a while. It was really bad, like wind and rain. I ran with a lad from Derry called Kyle Doherty, I think. And it was the first race I felt like, oh, actually, I know what I'm doing here. Do you know what I mean? Like when you're in control of what you are doing. And I felt like I was racing well. The only thing was we got to about eight. There's how many K? I think we got back to 8 miles in, and I was just thinking, I'm feeling good here, but I'll just let this guy think he's going to beat me. Do you know what I mean? So about 7 or 8 miles. So I was just we were going nip and tuck all the way. We were pretty close together, and I just thought I'll just give him a little bit of yard, and I think I'll be able to reel him in the last mile and beat him. And then I realised with a mile to go. That I couldn't go to the next gear. So I wasn't that tired. I just didn't have another step to move into. Do you know what I mean? And when you're not fit, I mean, that's quite common. Like when you're really fit, you can really go deep and you can really push yourself. But I didn't have that extra gear. But anyway, he beat me by about 5 or 6 seconds, I think. And I ran 52:38, which isn't too bad. Like I know I'm not in that good shape. So that suits me fine. But I didn't. Therefore, get an improver's challenge. I didn't manage to get an improvement on my 10K time.
So that's the politician's long ass excuse of why you didn't run faster, yeah?
Well, it was. I had to do an extra 6K. Yeah, I guess, yeah. But hang on, what's your excuse then?
Hey, my one, I was too scared. So I did the run. I did the run.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to time it. I ain't gonna lie. I didn't want to feel that pressure, you know? I'm withering away in my old age.
Yeah, shame, Jermaine. You should have got out there and done it. But anyway, so
I did the runs, but I just didn't time it.
Did you feel faster? Did you feel faster? That's the important thing. Did you feel like you were any faster than before?
Yeah, mentally when I was, yeah.
Yeah. We did have a couple of people. We'll name a couple. Callum had an, I think it was a 1% improvement. He ran 52.47. 57 rather. So he got 11 seconds over the month. He improved, which is pretty good. And another one, James Eckloff. He also improved. He had a 3.7% improvement. I mean, James did say he's lucky that he was unfit at the beginning of the challenge and then got fit towards and through the challenge, which is what you want. What we want. We want to see people getting improving on that. So we're going to go to our, there's a couple more, but we're going to go to our randomometer. And we're going to come up with the winner.
We should tell her to do rock, paper, scissors email.
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it?
And then they got obviously emailing rock, paper, scissors, and whoever wins with the t-shirt.
Yeah. Do you know what? We're going to do that today. I'm going to tweet out today. The winner will be from rock, paper, scissors. James, they've got to send me a message on rock, paper, scissors, what they're going to go for. And whoever wins will win. So we'll let you know the result of that later today via the medium of Twitter. So follow us on Twitter at Let's Get Running. You can see who won, James or Callum. And the T-shirt will be heading their way from rock, paper, scissors. Nice. We should talk about our interview to talk about. We should talk about what's been happening in the world of running. Our new section, news. There's been loads happening. Loads happening. Did you see much of it, Jermaine? Did you see this weekend's indoor champs or indoor?
Laura Muir tearing it up.
Laura Muir, she's fantastic, isn't she? I'd love to interview Laura Muir on here. That'd be amazing.
The best thing I saw.
Yeah.
And I know it's not really athletics. Was the BBC presenter that did that 60 meters.
Oh, I didn't see that. What happened?
Oh, man, it was so funny. So it's the one that was on Strictly, you know?
He tries everything, that fella, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't, obviously, they must have made a deal. And so he's on the start line with all these, like, proper runners. Because obviously they've got the standard to get in.
Yeah.
And in the first 10 meters, he's like, he's waddling. It was so funny. He was waddling, waddling, waddling. And then they finished and he's halfway.
Really?
And then he obviously was putting maximum effort in.
Yeah.
And he dips and they're all walking back to their bags. And he's like crashing into them and stuff. It was just, I was laughing so hard. It was.
Well, I've heard that the British team is missing. They've only got one sprinter. Haven't they, in the European team? Why don't they get that fella in there for a laugh?
definitely get the headlines.
I'm sure he'd pay his own way to Glasgow. That's where the Europeans is, so he should get him in, yeah. But did you see that guy as well, the guy who won who broke like the world record for the indoor mile? He beat like Kjeldtjup, wasn't it? Teferi or something.
He ran 3:31, he ran.
And he didn't even look bothered, did he? He was just like, all right, I broke the world record.
I don't like to say it, but that smells like EPO, but I don't like to say it.
Too late, it's already been said, yeah.
but yeah it's with break a world record and they ain't even out of breath. Yeah, that's suspect.
Yeah, it is a bit, isn't it? But she was amazing, like Laura Muir. She just absolutely destroyed it, didn't she? She was incredible. Such a good runner, like a good attitude, isn't it? Just go out there and just absolutely blast. Fantastic. And there was a big race in Armagh this week, one of the best 5Ks probably in Europe, I'd say, in terms of the depth of quality in there. And mostly, you know, not bringing in stars from across the world. It's just it's a good local race with incredible performances. I think there was the guy that won was a guy called Topi Reitanen. He's from Finland, so I'll probably pronounce that completely wrong. But he ran 13:43 around the streets of Armagh, which is pretty impressive. I know there's lots of other guys who were up there from Britain. I think Steph Twell on the 3K, she ran 8:59 for 3K, which is pretty impressive on the road. And in total, 113 runners broke 15 minutes. And 49 women ran sub-10 over 3K, which is amazing. So, yeah, some great results on Mark. That is a really big, great race to do if you're a British runner, want to run a 5K PB. Fantastic place to go and have a go. So I'm trying to look for... hang on. the British guys in that men's race, Adam Craig came in second, I think, and Sam Stabler was in third. I know Johnny Miller, former interviewee, was there not far away in fourth, which is pretty impressive. Women's results, as I said, Steph Twirl was a winner. And then we had in second place Jess Judd, and in third Amy Griffiths. So pretty impressive result. But they were upstaged in terms of 5K times by a race in Monaco. So I'm not sure which I'd prefer to go to in February, Monaco or Armagh. But in Monaco, the men's world record was set by Julian Vanders. Vanders? Amazing runner, this guy. He's 22 years old. He lives out in Kenya, in a 10. And he broke the world record. He ran 13:29 for 5K on the road. Because I think they might have... I'm not sure why some of these records are being broken, but I think they might have reset records or I don't know. And then for the women, also this on the same race, also broke the world record for 5K. Sifan Hassan, Dutch, from my adopted country, Holland. She ran 14:44. She beat the nearest finisher, which is Laura Whiteman, a British girl, by over 30 seconds. Laura ran 15:29 and Sifan ran 14:44, which is absolutely amazing. So, yeah, big things going on. He's amazing, that guy. Have you heard that Julian Vanders guy? I think he's Swiss, but he's a young fellow. He lives out in Iten. He broke Mo's European half marathon world record as well, which is pretty incredible. But hey,
that's tasty.
Yeah, it shows, like, I guess, which brings us on to our conversation really, before our interview, which is like, how do you create the conditions to perform at your very best? So we're going to be talking to Ian Beattie, who is the chairman of Scottish Athletics. And obviously, Scottish athletes are absolutely ripping it up. You saw Laura Muir breaking that British mile record indoors. There's a number of other, like Andy Butcher. You've got Lindsay Sharp. You've got Chris O'Hare. I'm missing loads out. But there's so many guys from Scotland doing so well. And obviously, they created a situation in Scotland where it's doing well. And Julian, heading over to Kenya, young Swiss guy, 22. He's gone to 10 and he's making it happen. Now, when you run at your best, Jermaine, what were the conditions? How did you create the conditions to make you perform at your best?
I would say it's probably lifestyle.
Yeah.
But you've got everything was just, I sacrificed everything for running, so I wouldn't go to weddings and stuff. So
yeah.
Everything was like, training, races.
Yeah.
And then you don't need to be in a super group, because as long as you've got scapegoats, you can still run fast times, because you can chase them, or they can run the first or last 400 or first and last 800. So you don't need to be in a super group.
Yeah.
But most importantly, you need to trust and believe your coach.
Yeah.
Because you know, there's always other people saying, "Oh, you do this, do that." You know, loads of athletes always do extra gym sessions, or "Let me do this crazy core stuff."
Yeah.
Where if your coach, you're not following your coach's program, then your coach isn't really coaching you, because you're not doing what he says. You're sort of got multi coaches. Then it's too many cooks. So yeah, I think you just got to be fully committed to whatever choice you make. Say, okay, this is my coach. Then you've got to agree and get on with them. And then that's what you do. And then fully committed.
Yeah. My wife.
Because when I ran my fastest, I didn't, obviously I've been away for a long time periods, but when I was running my fastest, I'd only go away for 4 weeks.
Okay. As in go away to altitude training?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not like I went and lived, go and live in Ethiopia for 4 months and stuff. So it's like, I think sometimes, obviously, different people are different, but it's just the balance. So it does come down to lifestyle.
Yeah.
Creating a good balance.
Yeah. And, the guys that are performing at the very top are the guys, you know, that they wake up, they run, they sleep. These guys in Ethiopia and Kenya, that basically they build their lives around the sphere of running. Well, that's what they do. But
because I remember loads of people would go to Poch, and they said they weren't convinced the altitude was helping them there, because it was quite low. But they said it's just getting away from everything, the distractions.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's why sometimes training camps are really good, because you just get away from loads of distractions.
Yeah.
Like the Wi-Fi is crap, so you can't always, do stuff. You're always playing your phone or texting or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just and you've only got training to think about.
Yeah, yeah. And that's Potchefstroom. That's in. Is that Potchefstroom?
Yeah, Potchefstroom in South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even like my Basingstoke group, they will go to Monte Gordo, you know, Portugal and stuff. But even then, for 2 weeks, they all improve because it's like 2 weeks of no distractions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking back to when I ran my best, and the one thing I can point at is basically I was given an opportunity to run at a high level, and then I kept getting the opportunity to do that. So I got into I was running wellish before Christmas, and I managed to get into the England cross country team. Right, so I did three or four on a two. What am I thinking? I did a couple of really big races. So I did one in Cardiff when I ran really well. And then we went away to Spain and did another race. And I don't know what it was, but something competing against these other guys and competing at the very highest level made you think you saw that they were just human. You were just the same as those people that were winning, Olympic medals or whatever. And then you thought you could compete. Like, because I remember the race in Spain I ran and I mean, I think I was 11th or something. I can't remember exactly where I finished, but I ran for most of there was five laps, most of the last two laps with a guy who got a bronze at London 2012 in the steeplechase. And it was just like, what? I can actually do this. You know, it gave me the confidence that actually I was good enough to compete. And I think actually competing and competing at a high level and just giving it a crack kind of gives you the confidence that you can then go on and achieve and you can... Yeah, you can do it. Do you know what I mean? So I think having
but top also, level competition. It gives, I think that gives you confidence as well.
Yeah.
To then start sacrificing more things. It's like, no, I won't go out because I need to do training because that person, like you say, that person I'm competing against, I'll probably do in training, so I need to be good for training.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Daley Thompson used to train twice on Christmas, so people think, oh, I better train Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly, like when you're around. Like when you're in a group and you're around other people and you see what they're doing and you see that, you know, these guys at the very top, but they're just humans who are very committed and focused on being the very best at running it. And you can do it. Everyone can do it. I'm technically terrible at running. I really enjoyed it and I got good at it. But yeah, I think it's having the confidence that you can is the most important thing. Like you can physically get yourself into great shape without the confidence that you can compete. Which only comes through proving to yourself that you can. You'll never get to the top level, I don't think.
Yeah, says by a wise man.
Says by a wise man. Excellent. Well, we'll get on with this interview with Ian and see what he has to say. I should mention there was on the news we forgot to mention the Seville Marathon because the guy who won, I've completely forgotten his name, but I will look at it now. The guy who won.
Well, I meant to.
To say that, Ebge Ayana, he runs for Moyo, and I ran with him when I was out in Ethiopia, and he was a nice guy, little short guy. I remember I did a session with him, a hill session with him, which lasted 2.5 hours, and we were running past cows and running past on this road up in Sendafa. It was amazing, yeah. So
and you beat him?
Did I, hell yeah. I was miles behind him.
Did I help?
But again, that was what that gave me confidence, like that I could compete because I was with him and another guy called Asafa, who actually he went on to I think he won Dublin last year, and I was getting beaten by these fellas, but I was running with them and I was competing and I wasn't that far behind, so I come off the back of that Ethiopia trip. If I hadn't fallen and bust my knee on the last day, I reckon I'd have run real quick after that. But anyway. It's all about being in there, getting involved.
Maybe it was that woman that cursed you, calling you white devil.
It was that woman, yeah. She ruined things for me. Anyway, we'll see. But cool, let's head back to the interview and see what Ian has to say. So here, speaking to Ian Beattie, how are you doing, Ian?
Very well, thanks, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well. And I must sort of be open and honest. I was given a tip-off. I told you you'd be an interesting person to talk to about Scottish athletics. But in doing a bit of research, my first question is, how many hours have you got in the day? You seem to be 100,000 things you're doing. I don't know how you fit it in. Like, just for the benefit of the listeners, you are the CEO of Lindsay's Solicitors. You're the chairman of Scottish Athletics. You're a race director and a competitor as well at the West Highland Way Ultra Marathon. You're a coach, is that right? Is it Harmony AC?
Harmony AC. I've just started doing some coaching. In fact, I've got a session tonight after our talk. I take my group on a Tuesday night.
Okay. How do you do it? And you're the veteran of sort of 100, over 100 marathons and half marathons. Is that right? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, 100 marathons and ultra marathons I've done, yeah. No, wow. It's been great. I'm very lucky that Lindsay's, which is the firm that employs me, are very understanding and I can juggle things. But it's maybe one we'll pick up on, because I think my role with Scottish Athletics is important. I'm non-executive.
Hmm.
And I've got a chief exec, a very, very able chief executive who runs the day-to-day show.
Hmm.
And I give my input in. I think got to make sure that works that way.
Yeah, fantastic. So, but going back to the beginning kind of your involvement in running, how did your love affair with running start? What got you hooked initially?
Well, I initially almost came into running a bit by accident. I qualified to be a football referee. And I realised I'd put on quite a bit of weight during my time at university, my time qualifying as a chartered accountant. And I thought, I'm probably not fit enough to referee. So I started running with that goal in mind, to try and get fitter. I then enjoyed the running so much that I joined a club, a local club, Troon Tortoises. I enjoyed the running, and the refereeing felt like an extra day's work every week. It was quite stressful. Yeah. So I refereed for a couple of seasons and then gave it up. But the running, I've never stopped. I just kept going with that.
Fantastic. And what was it then? What was it that you loved about running so much?
I liked the fact that I enjoyed when I get into the pub. I liked the competitiveness. But it was competitiveness in a good way. It was you could always do your own thing.
Yeah.
I liked the fact that I think quite quickly, especially when I joined my first club, I started to see times come down, started proving. I just love racing. I love when you put a number into a race. I've always enjoyed that. I enjoyed the competitive bit. And even now I'm older and operating nowhere near the levels I used to run, I still enjoy that thrill of putting a number on, racing against people and trying to beat them and accepting sometimes they beat you. But I just love that. And always have. So I think that gives me my kick from running.
Yeah, okay. And when was it? So how old were you then when you started sort of competitively running?
I mean, I was 24 then, so that was nearly 20 years ago. I'd started, been going ever since. I say I'd done a couple of marathons, one I trained for, but that was really the main sort of start to it, and just to go in ever since then.
Yeah. What do you think now running gives to you? So you, obviously you're not as competitive as you were then. What does running provide for you at the moment? Do you still run a lot?
I do, yeah. I still very much try and set myself targets each year. I've had a few problems the last few years with injury, but last year I've seemed to manage to get that under control with a wee bit of pain relief, which I've had for one of the injuries I've had. Yeah. Last year I managed to do a 24-hour race, which was the first time I'd been able to do that for ages. And this year I'm training at the moment for the South Downs Way 50, which is at the beginning of April. Right. So I've had quite a good January. I've had probably as good a January as I've had for a while, and still very much enjoying going out and doing all that.
Fantastic. And having done 100 marathons, how did you fit all that in? How did you manage to? You must have been doing marathons every few months when you were sort of going.
Yeah, I think when I look back, I've probably done. Some years I've done a bit more. That includes some ultras as well, which are probably in some respects easier on the body.
Mm.
I think to run a good marathon, I've always believed that's almost the hardest thing you can do, because everything's got to be right in the day.
Mm.
So I think it's just a reflection of the fact I've been doing it so long. I've never been one to bash out one every week, because I think when I look back in my marathons, I take much more pride from the ones I've done well than the fact I've done quite a lot, because I think... Mm. You can, I mean, if you're relatively fit, you can bash out marathons, half marathons, I think. But
yeah,
to actually do them in a good time, I've got a better time, I've got so much more respect for.
And have you got one particular performance you're most proud of, if you look back?
I've got 5 marathons under 3 hours. So yeah. My best was 2:56. And every one of these, I look back with great fondness. Yeah. Particularly probably the last one, I ran a 2:59 in Zurich, which was 9 years after I'd done the sub-3.
Mm.
That was brilliant.
Mm.
But I've also enjoyed it. I think my half PB's a lot better. I've got 1:17 half marathon PB.
Nice, yeah.
And that was just one of these days that came right. I've got a few others under 120. They're probably better runs. But I keep I'm an accountant by profession, and I keep a spreadsheet of all my races, and I can look back and see them all. Some people think it's quite sad, but I quite like just being able to see everything I've done.
And so were you involved with a club then in Scotland at that stage?
Yeah, I've always been with clubs. When I started off and was doing a lot of running, I was with Troon Tortoises, which was a sort of adult running club in the west of Scotland. But I had a couple of really good athletes who'd been through it. Brian Whittle's quite well known. Brian was a member of Troon. That's where he did his development work. Mm. Vicky McPherson, the same. Vicky ran the Barcelona Olympics. So that was my first club. And then I moved house and I moved to Central Athletic Club, which Central won the team I've worked at the National Cross Country for the last 8 years here. So big, successful club. And then I was at Strathairn Harriers. And then I moved through to Edinburgh and I've been with Harmony. I've been with Portobello for a while. So I've moved around clubs. And I think for my Scottish athletics role, that's great because I know people in all these areas and I've been in clubs with an awful lot of folk, which has been good.
Yeah. And it's obviously competing requires a lot of time and a lot of focus and attention. Like, what inspired you to become involved in the administration of the sport?
Well, that sort of started way back in 1998 when I was probably at a stage during my working career. Maybe I'd been in the role a few years and a bit of extra time. And at that time, Scottish Athletics was going through a modernisation process.
Hmm.
And I picked up the document that had gone out and I thought, this is really good. This makes sense. A lot of the principles that were there, I thought, very interesting.
Hmm.
And they were looking for people to join the board. I'd never been involved in sports administration. I'd never been involved in non-executive involvement at all then.
Hmm.
But I applied and I was offered a position on the board at that time. And it was a great learning experience to see. It was the first time the sport had appointed a full-time chief executive and was really building up itself at that time. I mean, there were a lot of things that could have been done better and so on, but it's like any startup business, I guess.
Hmm.
I was part of the board then. I was on there for about 3 years. My job took me to London at that stage, so I had to come off. But in 2006, I applied for a non-executive position with Sport Scotland, which is the national agency for sport.
Hmm.
And I was on there for 6 years, the last four of which I was vice chair of Sport Scotland.
Hmm.
I chaired it for a 4 month period on an interim basis as well. So I guess I built up at that time quite an understanding just of how sport and the whole worked, both at the performance end and at the development end as well.
Yeah. And then with the sort of taking over the chairmanship, when was that? When did you become chairman of the Scottish Athletics?
That was in early 2012 I took over there, which was, look back, it just was a fantastic time because we were about to have the London Olympics.
Mm.
It was an exciting time for sport in general, but I think probably fair to say Scottish Athletics wasn't in a great place at that stage, and there was a lot of work to do.
Mm.
But I could see the potential there and I didn't have any hesitation at all at getting involved.
Yeah. What was kind of the remit for the role? What was kind of your responsibility then when you came in to do that job?
Well, I felt coming in, I think every chair that comes into a role is going to shape it a bit the way he or herself decides to do.
Mm.
But I think I was very clear when I came in that I was going to be non-executive chair. One of the questions I got asked right away at the beginning was that my predecessor, Frank Dick, had been spending maybe 3 days, 4 days a week and working with Scottish Athletics. And I remember one of the journalists, Doug Gillen, asking me in my first interview, he said, how do you hope to do that when Frank was spending all this time? And I said, well, I don't think I need to spend the time. I think it's more important to be focused, more important to let the professional staff do what they are there to do, which was run the show with some guidance and oversight from me.
Mm.
And that's very much the way I've continued to try and do it. I think my role is non-executive. I've built up now quite a bit of experience of being non-executive. I think it's important you don't meddle too much. I am not chief exec. I'm not performance director. That's not my skill base.
Hmm.
And if we all remember what our roles are and try and do them well, I think it benefits the sport quite significantly.
So what did you think you could bring then to that role? What was your strengths that you thought you'd help Scottish Athletics with?
I thought I had quite a good balance. I'd spent 6 years in Sports Scotland seeing the breadth of what well-organised sports were expected to do and how they operated. And the example I've always held out there was Scottish swimming. Scottish swimming was I still think it was a bit of a role model for us. That was, they were the blue ribbon sport, the one that people aspired to.
Mm.
But I also, in an athletic sense, had a, I think I had a very strong understanding of the sport in Scotland. I'd already mentioned the number of clubs I'd been a member of.
Hmm.
I'd been involved with the West Highland Way Race. I was race director by that time. And I think, I would hope I was a fairly well-known face in the Scottish athletics community.
Hmm.
And I think that helps because if people know you, they're more likely to pick the phone up or come over and see you and have a chat. And it just helps build that whole trust and understanding.
Hmm.
And one of the things I said at the very beginning, and we've never changed from this, was I wanted athletics, Scottish athletics, to be somewhere that all of the members felt a pride in being part of and also shared a vision that we were all going to work in the same direction.
Hmm.
I've seen so many governing bodies where it's just the infighting and people don't get on. Hmm. And I didn't want Scottish athletics to be like that, and I think we've managed to make some real progress there. We are a sport, I think, where people take great pride. They look at Laura Muir, and people who are maybe our 10K runners think I'm part of the same sport in Scotland as Laura Muir is, and that's a source of great pride.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously, you've also had some incredible events in your during your tenure. So there was the 2014 Commonwealth Games, and you've got the European Indoors to come. Did you have an involvement with these events? Did you, or were they part of the strategy that you guys had come up with when you became chair?
It was actually, you might be surprised to hear this, but it was actually quite the opposite of our strategy. We knew these events were coming, but I've always said since I took over, I said, we won't be involved in the organisation. We won't be the lead for these events.
Mm.
And the reason for that is I think a small governing body like ours can be totally distracted by the organisation required.
Mm.
We've been really lucky in Scotland that the way the Scottish government has set up things is it's got Event Scotland, who their entire remit is to bring events to Scotland, not just in sport, but cultural events too.
Mm.
And that's worked really well. So Event Scotland have led with the likes of, at the time, Scottish Government, huge supporters of Commonwealth Games. So we are obviously very keen to play a part in that.
Mm.
But it's never been part of our strategy to be involved in the delivery of the organisation. And even the European Indoor that's coming up just in a month or so in Glasgow.
Mm.
My chief exec, Mark Monroe, sits in the steering group for that, which I think is important. But this is an event which is a partnership between Event Scotland, Glasgow Life and UK Athletics as the delivery arm.
Mm.
And we just don't have the resource. I've always been very keen that our focus has to be about development and particularly about clubs. And that's where we've put a lot of our emphasis, not diverting all of our staff to organise massive events.
Yeah. And that's something I was going to ask you about, sort of your vision and where you wanted to focus on and driving these improvements. What is it you thought you wanted to do? And like expand upon that issue about the backing up the clubs.
I think the clubs are the most important thing that when I came in, we recognised if the sport was going to develop, then it needed to be developed through our clubs.
Mm.
We're a member organisation. Our clubs are the members.
Mm.
But the example I've often given is that we've got something like 28 members of staff in Scottish Athletics. Mm. It's quite a small organisation. There's a limit to what 28 people can do.
Mm.
But we've got probably thousands of people across the 150 or so clubs in Scotland. And if we can get these thousands of people doing really good things, because there's a lot of great people in the clubs, all they need is a bit of guidance and shaping, then we can see great things happen. We can see these clubs get better and better.
Mm.
And that's what it's taken. We had a program, which we continue, a club development program called Club Together, which we asked clubs if they wanted to get involved in. Nobody was forced into it. And clubs began to see that this was really good and this was helping them develop.
Mm.
There was a bit of support for putting a paid person in, and that person wasn't a coach. It was more of somebody who looked at the club and tried to be and organise and recognise, right, where does the club want to go? What's the planning? What are our weaknesses? Okay, if we're going to attract more people, we need to have more coaches. And this was a bit, and we need to have better admin, and we need to get officials so we can take part in the competitions, and all the different parts worked there. And the clubs recognised at that time that they had to be ready for the fallout from the Glasgow 2014 Commonwealth Games, because they weren't going to get very long. There was going to be a short window where people would be desperate to find an athletics club, and they had to be ready. And full credit to them, they were ready, and have coped tremendously well with it.
Yeah, and obviously, as well as kind of the clubs thriving, you are. Scottish athletes are performing incredibly in the world. And you mentioned Laura Muir, but there's the people like Andy Butcher and Lindsay Sharp, Callum Hawkins, and Robbie Simpson. How is that a part? How does sort of the elite level? How does those guys at the top? How have you been able to create the situation where these guys perform well? And how? Why is it important? And do they? How does that tie into your strategy with the clubs?
Well, I think first and foremost, these athletes all work incredibly hard, and their coaches are massively committed. And there's others in addition to those you mentioned. We had Lee McConnell before. We had Ailey Doyle's come through. We've got athletes like Zoe Clark coming through. We've got real success in the para side too. But there's a common denominator in that they all work incredibly hard and are well coached. But what we'd hope we can put in place is a bit of a structure where people coming into a club get a great experience. They see the potential that they can develop. They continue to be well coached, and hopefully they can push through that top end. And I think it is motivational to see the likes of the men's 1500. I've been fortunate enough the last couple of British Championships to present the medals in that event. And both times it's been three Scottish athletes have won the three medals. And it's not even been the same three Scottish athletes both years.
Yeah.
And that's incredibly, I think, it must be motivating for athletes to want to push on. And as some see, they've done it. And we've had the athletes who have been there for a good few years, like Lee and then Ailey. But there's more and more coming through now. We've been very lucky in Scotland the way that these athletes you mentioned have been great role models. Laura Muir, I saw take part in a 5,000 metres in Glasgow, where she ran an incredible 14:52 just a few weeks ago. She was running at Stirling. Andy Butcher's done. To be fair, almost all the athletes have been. They've supported Scottish events, and that's motivational for the youngsters coming through. But I think we've got to have a system behind that where the clubs are capable of taking youngsters and giving them a great experience that they want to stay in the sport and develop, and then they get the right coaching the whole way through.
Yeah. And do you have a continued close relationship with these guys, with their coaches that they go on to train with? Obviously you create the situation with the clubs and you've got them performing to a high standard. Are they closely tied to Scottish Athletics as they continue to their careers?
I think once they move to the funding level, the funding is done through the UK level, through UK Athletics. So the likes of Laura Muir's funding and all the other athletes are on there are at that level. But I think where we do see, hopefully, I think there's been a great loyalty from the athletes to the Scottish Athletics support as and when we can support them. And there's very, very close relationships. So our head of performance, Stephen Maguire, will keep very close to all of the athletes at that level. And I think the relationships are good. They appreciate what's happened, but they are being funded now. The top athletes have been funded from the UK rather than from Scotland. We don't have funding to do that type of work. And it's actually going to be, I think, is one of the issues we've identified, that looking ahead in a time when it's possible funding's likely to be possibly tighter. How are we going to support all the athletes we've coming through the pathway? And that's one of the challenges we've got as a board.
And in a couple of weeks' time, you've got the national cross country coming in. What role do these big events play in that strategy of getting people kind of into clubs and enjoying enjoying athletics? What role does the national cross country play in that?
I think national cross country is one of my favourite days of the year. I think this year will be my 22nd national cross country I've taken part in. And I always say that I'll keep competing until the year I'm lapped, and then it might be time to reconsider. So far, I'm just hanging on. But it's a fantastic day. It's been at Falkirk the last 14 years or so, which is very much the centre of Scotland. The clubs, it's just a great club day. It's a day where from under 13 all the way up to some 75, 80-year-olds are taking part. There's clubs there supporting. And I think we've looked around. The last few years, we've had over 2,000 entries. We probably have 5,000 people in the park supporting.
Wow.
It's just an inspiring day for clubs. And and we're able to use it in the likes of the sports minister will come along, and they actually get a demonstration of what club athletics is all about and why it's really important. Now, all the aspects of that. People want to do the best for their team.
Yeah.
And their club, it doesn't matter if they're in the top six of the club in a counter or not, they still want to do the best.
Yeah.
We've got a competition for the club which over our three national championships produces the most athletes, just those taking part. And that's given a real boost to clubs trying to win that.
Mm.
It's just a great day. And if anybody had the chance to come along to Falkirk, I'd hugely recommend it.
And your description of it there, like when I go along to the National Cross every year, and I love it as an event. This is the English National Cross, but it's potentially declining in its there's more entrants every year, but there's less maybe competition at the top end, and certainly there's not as many viewers coming along to visit as a spectacle. How are you guys trying to increase the interest in the event and make it a thing to come and see, an event people should join in with?
I think the communications team have done really well with that, and they build this up as a big event. And we've got one of the newspapers that's media partner, and that helps push it. My own firm, Lindsay, sponsors the cross country series, so we push that out. But the comms team under Peter Jardine do a great job of that, and with a lot of the online thing. And it becomes an event that I think almost all Scottish clubs want to be a part of, the excitement for that builds. So it's helped the last few years. Some of the top athletes have taken part in it. I'm delighted to see Steph 12 coming this year. That'll be great. I don't think Steph's ever taken part in the Scottish National before. She's previously won the English National. But the quality is always there, and I think people recognise that to get into the top 100 of the Scottish National Cross Country Championship, you have to be a very good runner and have a good performance. So yeah, we've been fortunate, but I think everything, the whole build up, the whole way that the cross country has been promoted, the whole way that clubs have been promoted has helped develop that event.
And I've heard there may be some. Have you got some tricks up your sleeves this year? Have you got any plans to make this year a bit different? You doing any drones or any screenings or any live action? Because I noticed you guys did. You know, you try and with put the was it the Scottish Indoor Championships recently was shown live on the web. So are you doing anything special this year?
Yeah, we're doing it. We've got the same idea, probably more extended coverage than last year. We've got the drones coming back. We've got the film maybe done. So we hope to have the full package out early evening for people to watch there.
Great.
Which again is great. And the whole development and technology has given us the chance to do that.
Mm.
20 years ago, these events may have been screened by BBC Scotland, and that's not happening now, unlikely to happen. But to get people filming at a very good standard and have the highlights programmes come out, I think is really good and helps add to the whole day.
Yeah. When I first started running the intercounties, and it would be on Sky Sports, and for me that was almost something I was really proud that I was in a race that was going to be shown live on TV, and it encouraged me to go along and take part, and I'd tell my friends and I'd tell everybody, go and watch it on here. And it's a real shame that I know that it's not a mainstream sport, and therefore there's not the audience to warrant BBC or a Sky Sports coming along, but it's such a shame. And it's a shame that the National Cross in the UK isn't being covered like that, or the intercounties in the UK. There's no chance of seeing it. You've got to scroll through Twitter to find out results from somewhere. It's great that you're putting that on, and also within the same day, people can actually watch the footage. It's good to hear you guys are maybe ploughing a furrow for other people to do the same thing.
I think it's a great thing to do. I think hopefully it'll give a flavour of it. as I've said, how much I love the day. Hopefully it'll give a flavour. But I think it's just making use of what's there, the new channels that we can show these things. And the quality is very, very good. And it's a good way of highlighting the great things we have in our sport with cross country.
Yeah. And going forward sort of into 2020, obviously you're committed to being the chairman until 2020. What does the future look like for Scottish athletics and perhaps UK athletics as well? How do you want to kind of increase and keep improving the way you have been?
I think it is all about continuous improvement. One of the we just released our most recent strategy, which is an 8-year strategy, and we called it the Building a Culture of Success. And I think that title is quite important. What we want to do is not make this a sort of flash in the pan. We want to make sure we've got the right structures, we've got clubs doing the right things, we do that long beyond maybe there anybody else being there. It should be able to survive individuals. But part of it's just a continuation. We had a board meeting this week. We start to talk about, I've got a year and a half left, so the sport will have to start thinking about my successor and on it goes. But the likes of, we've got a very good team in place. We brought back Stephen Maguire, who'd been with us in the performance side. And Stephen is a bundle of energy. So much going on, wants to improve all the time. The development side going well too. So yeah, I think we just, as any organisation, you have to continue to improve and continue trying to do things well.
Okay, and your goal is to continue with the improving that standard within the clubs. And if you had to sort of say, is it like, are you aiming for sort of the next few years looking at the sort of the front end, or do you want to continue to increase the depth of people in competing in the national and different events across the year?
I think we want to see both happening, and I think we are seeing athletes coming through. There's a lot of strength underneath the top athletes, the ones you named earlier on. There's others that are coming through. And we want to see that continuing to happen. We want to see the clubs being strong, developing athletes all the way through till they get to that stage and become big names.
So there's a
lot to continue doing and to keep that going.
Fantastic, exciting times. I better not keep you too long, because you've probably got to be ready to coach the athletes very soon.
Yeah, I've got my group, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. I've got a group of about five or six I'm coaching at the moment, and I just did my qualification last year, but I'm thoroughly enjoying doing the coaching. It's been really good.
Fantastic. And are you going to join in the session yourself, or are you going to be focused on watching and imparting knowledge?
I probably join about one in every four, but I think tonight I may join tonight's session. See, if when I join them, I realise how difficult it is to run that fast. Yeah.
And I've got three quick fire questions I'm going to ask everyone that I interview on the show, and they are: if you could be anywhere running right now, other than obviously you're off for a run now, but anywhere running hypothetically, where you're running right now, where would it be?
I think I would like to be somewhere a lot warmer. I struggle with the cold Scottish winters. If I could be somewhere like Tenerife or Australia, that would be where I would like to running along the beach in Sydney. That would maybe be quite a point.
Lovely. And the second question is, can you recommend our listeners something? So it can be anything, something physical, like a book or a film or a TV show, or an experience perhaps. Anything you think you'd recommend our listeners to do?
Probably an experience, I would say, and I'm very biased with this one, but it would be if people can build up to take part in the West Highland Way Race, which is the race I organise, 95 miles from Ogai to Fort William. I think it's a life-changing experience for so many people, not just the run itself, but the family feel of that event and the friendships that are made. It's one of the great events, and certainly my favourite.
Fantastic. And I've had a look at it. It's in June, so you haven't got to deal with the weather too much in the middle of the summer, I guess.
Yeah, although over the years we've had all sorts of weather, but the big advantage of June is at that time of year in Scotland, there's maybe only about 3 to 4 hours of darkness. So starts at 1 a.m, and often by 3:30 it's light again. So
Fantastic. Which is good. I'll put a link on the show notes so people can have a look at the race for that one. And our final question is, in your opinion, what is the greatest endurance running performance of all time?
I think the greatest is Paula Radcliffe's marathon. I said earlier on, I think the marathon is the most difficult distance. But I think Paula Radcliffe's 2:15:25 in 2003 is remarkable. And the fact nobody's really come close to that, no woman's come close to that since, I think says so much about that performance. I remember watching it. Astonishing. It still, to me, stands out as the outstanding performance.
Yeah, and it was just her relentlessness. She just got onto that pace, and she just, I'm going to stay here. I'm never going to give up. I'm just going to keep churning it out. It's incredible, really. It's a good.
And the commentator said to her early on, she was far too fast. This pace could never be kept going, and she did.
Fantastic. Well, good luck with the national. Hope it's a good event. If anyone is in the area, head down to Falkirk on the 23rd of February. Is that right?
It's the 23rd. 23rd, perfect. Saturday the 23rd. It's perfect. A great day. It'll be good to see you.
Yeah, it'll be cracking. And I'll definitely tune in from here in Amsterdam and check out the results when they come in. Thanks, Ian.
That's great. Thanks so much, Sean.
No problem. So nice to chat to Ian there. Good luck to them. Good luck to Scottish Athletics with the forthcoming national. Be good to see how that goes. So we need your reviews. Keep coming. Keep them coming in. We love them on iTunes. We love them anywhere, but iTunes are the best. They help us grow the show. So we want to.
Yeah, we need that love.
We need that love. Yeah, and good. Keep joining into the Battle of the Podcasts. Let's Get Running group again. I'll put a link on the show notes. But if you go on Strava and search Battle of the Podcasts, you can join that Strava group and join Let's Get Running Strava group too. Be part of that. It's good to have you guys on there, which is really nice.
So Sean can spy on you and see how many miles or kilometres.
And then get jealous that you're running and doing that. You can look at my runs in Gran Canaria where I was running down the hill going, when I was nearly crying, and see what happened. I think I broke a course record going up there, by the way. I know.
So, that's because no one goes up there because they're not stupid.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah, stupid run. Anyway, so that was cool. Yeah, what are you up to? You got anything coming up?
Obviously, I've just been playing football and stuff. Yeah. So obviously, a couple of matches. We played yesterday, which was comical, as always.
Yeah.
We gave up away a penalty in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So we were 1-0 down. And then for some reason, I was taking a throw-in, and I was playing right back.
Yeah.
And there was like, throw it up the line. And I was thinking, there's too many people there. Let me throw it in the middle where the defender's open, yeah?
Yeah.
Throw it to the defender, strike runs on, score, it's 2-0. And now... It was like, oh God. So that was blatantly my fault, yeah?
Yeah.
And then they obviously to have another attack. They take a shot. Yeah. I slide in.
Yeah.
It ricochets off me.
Yeah.
And the goalie saves it, but he parries it up.
Oh, no.
He parries it with one hand, then parries it with the other hand. And then it hits another defender in the side of the face and goes in. So it was 3-0 after. 3-0 after 15 minutes.
Yeah. How did it feel?
Luckily, obviously, our striker did some really crazy good skills and scored a goal, and we all got motivated.
Yeah.
And then they kept fouling us in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
So we scored the next two goals from set pieces, which were I got both assists, and one of them,
yeah,
it came in, I jump up the head of it,
yeah,
and it hits me in the back. So it bobbles off my back, and then the next person knees it, and then it rolls between the goalie's legs. So it's proper Sunday League classic stuff.
So if anybody wants to see this spectacle of people just like jumping and hitting off different body parts, where do they watch, Glenn? Where do you play?
This ain't even the best part, right?
Yeah.
So it must be like 40 minutes had gone.
Yeah.
One of our players got elbowed in the back of the head, and his head was bleeding.
Yeah.
So he was upset, and then the ref said, "Oh, just grow a pair." And so the player was upset. He went off, and he's like putting water, you know, like washing off the blood.
Yeah.
And then the other team were winding him up, saying, "Oh, what's that magic water, yeah?"
Yeah.
So as soon as he comes on, they've got the ball. He goes lunging in to this tackle. And it's a yellow card, but the ref gives him a red card, right?
Yeah.
And then he was trying to fight the ref. So people were trying to hold him back, right? And then his dad's trying to fight the ref, right? So we're all holding him back, yeah. And then the ref goes, "Game's called off," right? So the ref calls the game off. So the other team, because it's free, the score is 3-3 now. The other team, like, okay, quickly take the nets down. And so that they must have wanted the abandoned match. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And then everyone's calmed down. We talked to the ref. The ref said, "Okay, fine. Let's start the match. Carry on with the match."
Yeah, okay.
And only 40 minutes are gone, and he's like, "Oh, we just call it half time." Yeah. I was like, "What?" And then he gets on the pitch. He goes, "Oh, they've taken the nets down. No, I'm going home."
So this is only half an hour. It's only half a match you played.
Yeah.
3-3. Guy got kicked in the head. Is this an episode of EastEnders?
I swear to you, this is what happened. It was crazy. And I brought the guy that grooms my dog. He likes football, and so I said, "Oh, come, we're always short on players, right?" So I bought my dog groomer, and
he's got a dog groomer. What kind of person has a dog groomer?
Hey, first world problems. Hashtag first world problems. Yeah. So he's there, and he goes, "Oh, Jermaine," he goes, "is it always like this?" I said, "No." I said, "We're usually short players," but I said, "It's never this crazy."
A nice day was had for everyone. Lovely. So hopefully you'll fill us in on the next match report in the next podcast.
Yeah.
Nice one. Well, we'll let everyone get on with it, and get your training in for the big half. We are training. I'm going to go out later on and do a nice 30k. What are you doing today? What are you running?
I'm going to run back from work, so I'll be doing that 10k.
Nice. Perfect.
You never know. Okay, I'll straw from it. Make up for last time.
Perfect. Nice one. Get that training done, Jermaine. Lovely. We'll hammer it at the big half. Nice one.
Don't worry. You're our secret weapon. It's fine.
See you next week.
Yeah, see ya. Bye.